Welcome to Real Career Talk. I'm your host, Phil Burkett. This is a monthly interview brought to you by the Network National, where we spend 30 minutes with internal and external experts discussing career hot topics. Today, our theme is around growing your influence. I'm excited, I'm privileged, and I'm honored to have with us here today, Elle Michelle Smith. She's the CEO founder of No Silos Communications, LLC, which is a media and consulting company that blends talent development and strategic communications to develop high-performing executive leaders. She is an ICF certified executive, a personal coach at her practice. She has worked with many corporations like American Express, Microsoft, Amazon, AT&T, Google, Warner Media, and so much more. She's the author of the award-winning and best-selling book, No Thanks, 7 Ways to Say I'll Just Include Myself, a guide to rockstar leadership for women of color in the workplace. She's also starting on her next series, Yes Please, 7 Ways to Say I'm Entitled to the C-Suite, Secrets Women of Color Need to Know Now to Find Their Happy and Win an Exclusive Corporate Culture. She's the creator and the executive producer and host of the Culture Soup podcast, which is found in over 70 countries. She's held officer level positions. You know how we like to hear the folks talk that it probably ain't never did it, but she's done it. She was actually vice president before the age of 30. She fell into entrepreneurship, making her agency's 7-figure sales milestone in 5 years, year five. She answered to AT&T, helped build their D&I corporate communications capability from scratch. She did it in 2 years. She didn't even stop there. She built another innovative award-winning business model to complement that, which is all about inclusion marketing. She has over 25 years of experience as an elite award-winning communicator, integrated marketer. Yes, global agencies. She previously was a contributor to Black Enterprise. She's an adjunct professor of strategic communications at the Texas Christian University Bob Schaefer College of Communications, where she also sits on the board of visitors. Woo! We're happy to have Elle Michelle. Hello and welcome to Real Career Talk.
Hey, Phil, you know what? Congratulations on making it through all of that. Woo! I appreciate that warm introduction, and I'm blessed and happy to be home with the AT&T network.
Well, yes, yes. And we welcome you back. Welcome you back home. So now everybody has access to Google, some type of search engine. We can find out a lot about you on Google. Tell us something that we might not find out about you on Google, Elle Michelle. What would that be?
Oh, what you wouldn't find out? Oh, that's hard. That's a good question. Let's see.
Ooh. Favorite food. Let's do that.
Favorite food. I love Indian food.
Okay.
I love Indian food. And my favorite Indian food is biryani. I'm a new vegan, so I have to do vegetarian options sometimes, especially if they don't have cheese. But mm-hmm. I love Indian mm-hmm. food.
Mm-hmm. All right. Indian food. And you're a vegan. See, there you go. Audience, you're finding out.
But you can Google that.
Oh, well, see, now, come on. Okay, we're going to find
tried,
out.
I tried.
We're going to find out more.
Okay.
Don't give up on me. All right. So we found out a lot about your career. We have some listeners in our audience that are starting out early. I have a mantra out there. I believe that life is lessons learned. You'll find that tag somewhere out there if you ever look me up, life lessons learned. So what are some valuable lessons that you've learned for those people just starting their career, just high level? What would you say?
You know, it's interesting because it's something that I wish that I knew when I was just beginning my career. In fact, I wish I knew this when I was younger, like my daughter's age, and I'm glad she's learning it now. And that is that you have intrinsic value and it's tied to your story, and understanding who you are and knowledge of self, knowing your identity beyond your name and your title and even your family goes a long way to pushing you forward. If you can recognize that value that you have inside, you can go further faster.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about that intrinsic value that you might have based on your history and your upbringing, your learning, your education, all of that. Talk to me about intrinsic value. Give me another way of looking at that for the listener out there.
Okay. Well, extrinsic value is that value that's outside of you. So many of you might know that as your market value. Once you're in the job market, you will know that there's a dollar amount that you are worth when it comes to your talents, abilities, and how you show up. But your intrinsic value has everything to do with what the God Almighty created inside of you. Okay. And that's the good and the bad, because we have learned from our challenges. At least we should have. There are lessons learned, and all of that put together makes us stronger and it makes us who we are. So that's going all the way back to understand what you've been passionate about, even beyond what you're passionate about today as an adult. And this gets back to your ability to dream and just unlocking what it is that you have been passionate about, what your superpowers might be. At that intersection, we're talking about your purpose. And that's where we're going to find your value. And, you know, I speak from the intersection of applied positive psychology and neuroscience.
Okay.
And so much of that is built around your happiness and finding success. You've got to find the happiness first in order to be successful. And part of that happiness journey is understanding who you are. And that's the only way that you can be authentic, because otherwise, if you don't know who you are, how can you be you? You end up trying to mimic everybody else you see.
Mm-hmm. First thing that comes to mind when I add this on to what you just said, which is so powerful and in the moment, I appreciate that. So follow up with when I including mistakes. Yeah.
Listen, we learn from mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we want to go through life and gloss over and make it a big Instagram highlights reel of our lives, the truth is behind those Instagram pictures and between those posts are those gritty moments that make us who we are. And there are some hard truths about ourselves that we have to embrace. And it's not until you embrace that as a part of who you are and let go of the negative feelings about it that you will be unleashed to be your best self. I'll give you a great example. You know what's most inspiring to people when it comes to leaders? It's the stories they tell. Now, let's look at Oprah Winfrey, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Undoubtedly, we can all agree that this media mogul is a fantastic leader in the media area, just as a human being, as one of Fortune's most powerful women, and she's a millionaire, multimillionaire. I think she's getting close to that billionaire mark.
Yes, she
is. All that to be said, it's not the extraordinary things that cause people to follow Oprah. Do you know what it is?
Mm-hmm.
It's the story she tells about growing up as a little Black girl who was, you know, ignored, undermined, beat up. You know, she was beat up. She was misused, mistreated. Growing up in the South as a little girl that everyone underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a very common story. And that bit of information makes Oprah relatable. And everybody wants to lean in, because all of a sudden, I could be like Oprah because I came from ordinary means. So, yes, those bad things that happen to you in your life, whether it happens because of your own volition or something that someone did to you, it makes you powerful. Michelle Obama, she's even told us she's been in those rooms with those so-called smart people, and they're not that smart. What makes people want to follow Michelle Obama isn't just because she was the first lady. It was because she tells the story of being that little Black girl from Chicago, on the south side of Chicago. And suddenly she's relatable. So by all means, you've got to embrace the good and the bad and the things that you think that people would think are ordinary.
Because that makes the whole, picture come complete, actually, and who you are. How can you be transparent when you're leaving out stuff?
That's another day, right?
That's another discussion for another day. All right. So I want to get into influence. One of the things that we like to say is influence, you think about it, it has a lot of advantages. Now, when you get one of the classes that we used to teach, management development, we used to talk about what makes a leader great and what makes it you're different. You can take the managerial title, but that doesn't necessarily make you the leader. So what makes you the great leader? And one word that comes to mind is that you're very creative and you're inspiring and you're influencing others. Now, with that said, gaining influence takes time, just like building trust. We had a lot of discussions about building trust takes time and effort. Now, with that said, share three strategies anyone could put together in order to gain influence. What would that be?
Okay. First of all, you need to believe in you. And that ties back to what I just explained about knowing who you are and understanding your value. Because if you believe in you, you will understand that no title in the world makes you a leader.
Yes.
It is the intrinsic value that you bring to the table. That means that your great work, and this is number two, your great work and the power of your incredible excellence that you show consistently has the power to build followership. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about social media. I'm talking about people who become believers. They become disciples because they have experienced you and your great talent and what you have to offer. That qualifies you to move people to not only build buzz about you, but they'll also present you with opportunities, but they'll do things for in rooms for you where you might not even sit. You may not even be in the room when these things happen. And that's when we start to see the behavioral shift. And that's what makes you influential. It's not just that they know who you are. It's not just that they follow you on social media. It's that they will change their behavior on your behalf. That's key. And then third, I would say, influence really is about your ability, even if you're in the room, to shift that room, even from the back of the room. You don't have to be up front speaking to everybody to influence how things go down in that room or that space or that industry. It's just that you have to be raising the right kinds of questions, speaking in terms of innovation. In other words, not repeating what you hear everybody else say, literally saying things and asking questions about things that no one's pondered before. And this is leadership, right? The first to do, or you have people behind you. In fact, first implies that there's second, third, and fourth and everybody behind you, right? That's what leadership is all about. So if you're parroting things that you're seeing, and I see a lot of this in social media, it's like everybody's a life coach all of a sudden, right? And they all parrot the very same things. But rarely do you see someone, and these are the ones that stand out, the John Maxwells of the world, you know, the Valerie Burtons of the world, that literally say something that make you think that you hadn't heard before.
Sure.
And that inspires influence.
Being strategic in how you go about your thing is awesome. I love your points that you made. First, you got to believe in yourself. Then you have to create that history, that story of success where people can say and become your advocate. As we've had many discussions, network audience, we've had many discussions about advocacy and people mentoring, but you know, also sometimes being supporting and pushing you forward, even if you're not in the room. And then finally, the third one was awesome. Making a shift, causing, what is it, the old adage they like to say, I'd like to be the, not the thermostat, I don't want to be the temperature gauge, I want to be the thermostat.
Yes, in the room. Change the temperature.
change it, I love it. Awesome. So let's talk about you changing, you causing a shift in the environment with your first book, No Thanks, 7 Ways to Say It, I'll Just Include Myself. Talk about one of the pivotal moments that you had that might have inspired you to write that book.
You know, it's interesting because this book was a work in progress since about 2016, and it built upon itself and it morphed over time. The story about the book behind the book mm-hmm. is intriguing. I just shared it on my online private network called SlayNet, where we have like-minded people who are all striving to become extraordinary rock star leaders. They come together, they can chat with one another, they can network. I share content, they share content. We have live broadcasts. You get the idea, okay? Mm-hmm. So no, I share exclusive content with them. And I just told this story yesterday. And it was that, one, this book started as a result of an idea that I had after I had amassed tons of content as a contributor for Black Enterprise. And the more I was asked to speak, and I was doing a lot of speaking for AT&T, which is how a lot of you know me right now, around diversity, equity, and inclusion and communications and marketing and all of that good stuff. But while those asks were coming my way to speak on those topics, there were other asks that were coming my way that were asking me, okay, talk to us about personal branding. Talk to us about leadership and career. So I was speaking on those topics as well, showing up at member circles or mentor circles and such as well. So every time I would write an article, it was a result of something I was speaking about. And I did that one way to save time, to be efficient, because I had my day job too, right? keep getting Exceeds ratings in my role there and do my day job. But I had to find a way to actually write and speak too. It was a lot. And I'm a mom in chief. So it was a lot. So ultimately, I would write every time I spoke. And before long, I identified a thread. And there were 12 strategies that I wanted to share, especially with women of color, especially with Black women, to thrive in an exclusive corporate culture. Now, there's a guy that's sitting behind me. He's kind of standing back there. I don't know if you see his wide brim hat. But everybody who's behind me, if their book or something's behind me, has had something to do with where I am today. But that gentleman with the collar, and in fact, you see that there's some AT&T colors back there. He was a spokesperson of one of our biggest campaigns that we did while I was there, and it was called Inspired Mobility. I got to know Rev Run during the time that we were doing Inspired Mobility, and he was our biggest spokesperson. And as we were traveling from place to place to place, he was challenging me behind the scenes and saying things like, you know what, Michelle, you're out there speaking, you're good at it. You're writing, and then your Instagram is private. So he would challenge me on these things. He's like, open up the Instagram, you want to be a speaker, you need to do these things. Now, his whole entourage, and I say entourage, he's not pretentious at all. His two managers were always with him, Uncle Perry and also Michael Lehman. Michael Lehman is a quiet giant, and he manages Run DMC and primarily Rev Run, but he has a long track record of managing names like Grace Jones, Jodeci. I mean, he was literally with Bono when Bono got his first gig at a club and still has the $500 check. This is Michael Lehman. So if you look inside the book in the acknowledgments, these names come up because one day Rev Run's manager was with me. One of my signature keynotes when I talked about inclusion marketing ended with me talking about Inspired Mobility. And there was a big picture of Rev Run that showed up. And at the beginning of it, I tell the story, the very impressive and ingenious story of Walk This Way, the creation of that to this day best-selling single for Run DMC and even Aerosmith that revived their careers. He liked the way I told that story, and he wanted to show up while I was in New York to hear me speak about it. Ultimately, Michael leaned in one day after getting off the phone with Rev and telling him how he really enjoyed my speaking and said, you know what? I'd like to support you. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't know what that meant. Here I was, 25 years in corporate, and I'm a corporate person. I'm not in showbiz. I don't know what that stuff means, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I want to manage you. And I was like, I don't know how that works, right? My girlfriend was there, and she's like, just listen to him. You know, you don't know what this means. So ultimately, he wanted to put me on more stage speaking. And I knew that that might come into conflict with what I was doing with AT&T, whether that was an unwritten rule, which we actually talk about in the book, or a written rule, mostly mm-hmm. unwritten, mm-hmm. that there would be some folks who would, you know, turn up the haterade a little bit more if I showed up on a TED Talk stage all of a sudden, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what, Michael, there's this book that I'm writing. And if you could get me a meeting, I don't have an agent. I don't have query letters. I don't even know what you're supposed to do to pitch a book. But who do you know? And he said, I know some people. So in short order, I was on a plane to New York to sit with the senior vice president of creative services at HarperCollins and meet the senior editor at Amistad Books. And all I did was walk in there. This is crazy because Valerie Burton, who's a dear friend of mine, she's written 13 books. She's my mentor coach. She's back there too. You can see her.
Okay.
I'm on the phone with her on the way to HarperCollins in an Uber. I've been trying to get hold to her for a while to ask her, what do I say in this meeting? Mm-hmm. I'd never been in a meeting like this before. I could kind of lean into my pitching abilities, you know, as a strategic communicator, but this is publishing. I'd never been around it. She finally calls me back and I'm in the Uber and she said, wait, what are you doing? So I explained it to her and she said, well, wait, you're going there? I said, yes, but I need to ask you, what do I need to say? She said, stop. No. Before we get there, you're walking into HarperCollins. And I said, yeah, I am. And I said, why? She said, nobody does that. Nobody does that. What did you do? I was like, well, Michael got me a meeting. She said, well, what did you tell them? I said, I just kind of had an outline. She said, oh my God. She's like, you have a book. I don't need to tell you what to say because these people are already bought in.
Right.
And I said, whoa, okay. She said, well, just walk into your purpose the way God has set it up for you. You don't need me. Okay, good luck. Bye. So I walk into this office and I walked into that place three different times. Two times while I was still on staff at AT&T.
Right.
One of those times after I'd left. And this is the pivotal moment for me because in the beginning of the book, you'll see that I'm sitting in the office of the swank office of an officer that I really respected, who was, after I'd gotten my layoff notice, telling me that several of the officers wanted me to stay and they were going to figure out a way to do that if I wanted to do it. And because I respected this person so much, mm-hmm. I listened to him and we had a series of meetings. The second time I came in there, we're drinking Topo Chico's and he said, you're not going to stay, are you? And I said, you know what? I would, because I really love this company. Right. And so many of the great leaders that are here. But I have some things that I need to check off. I had this list of six things that I wanted to do to accomplish that I couldn't when I wrote it back in grad school. 22 years old. I didn't have the credibility. I didn't have the credentials, didn't have the connections, all of those things that you need to start to do the things that were on my list, including publish a book. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I only had two more of those things to check off. And I also had some opportunities on the outside from other places. And my gut was telling me, just go see. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, what are you going to do? I said, you know what? I really don't know. I've got options. I've got opportunities. And I want to look into them because they're squirreling my purpose. And I'm not sure that I can continue to do those things if I stay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So ultimately, I took that leap of faith. Walked out of there and took a couple of vacation days ahead of my last day, jumped on a plane, was on my way to Lane College to continue what I call the speaker tour, to end all speaker tours. I did probably about 40 speaking ops that year alone. And I was going to sit with Daryl and Belle from A Different World in front of the whole campus and community there at Lane College. If you remember, he's from A Different World. He's my frat brother. Shout out 190608, all that good stuff. But we were going to talk about leadership before these kids and students at Lane College. And that whirlwind took me all over the place. I had also decided at that point too, to look into getting my credentials as a coach. Mm-hmm. And that journey took me to places that I knew I belonged.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this book evolved over time. I didn't get the deal at HarperCollins. Apparently, I was down to a couple of folks in the last pitch meeting, and the senior editor who believed in it so much was so disappointed. But I came out of there with not just a query, a whole proposal that was professionally written. I had myself a marketing deck that I didn't have before. And he also supplied me with six other editors at six big houses. So the twist and turn is, and I'm going to let you talk here in a second, but the story is amazing.
I'm enjoying it.
The twist and turn here is this. I went on and got an agent. I secured somebody who was going to look at the proposal, and I was going to give her those six names and whoever other relationships she had to pitch the book. But as time rolled on and she kind of sat on it, she started to change the content and suggested I change the premise of the book. And started saying, well, why don't you write about entrepreneurship? You know, that's me too, but that's another book down the line.
Yes.
And there is a thread in the book around entrepreneurship, but it's not about, you know, launching out on your own. It's using that entrepreneurial spirit.
Right.
Which is the same spirit as a transformational leader, the same stuff they're looking for in these corporate offices. I've got to tell that story.
Mm-hmm,
and pretty much she told me, I know what they're looking for. So that's when it hit me. I was like, here we are. We've got someone who happens to be of color, by the way, who was so bought in and centering the white power structure of publishing, just like so many of us do in corporate, that we couldn't see the forest for the trees to know that there were Black women who needed to hear from a voice like mine, who was relatable, accessible, and had lived it from top to bottom, and also had lived that entrepreneurial journey to bring the kind of insight that they could relate to and actually live by. That's when I said, go ahead.
From both sides.
Yes.
Corporate and entrepreneurial.
It was July of 2020. Mm-hmm. We were in the middle of the lockdown. And I turned to my book coach and I turned to a friend of mine, Jalen Bledsoe, who's like a 21-year-old multimillionaire. That's a whole other Oprah show. You can check his story out on my podcast, one of the early podcast episodes. But what I heard from both of them was, you've got a story. This doesn't need to sit anymore. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself. So within that time frame, the book came out in August of 2020. I self-published this thing and got it out there with all the cultural context around George Floyd, the pandemic, Donald Trump, everything that was going on in that moment, the void in leadership, the void when it came to anti-Blackness, all of these things, and how it became this perfect storm and this moment for Black women to step into their power. Our vice president showed up. Stacey Abrams showed up. Black women were showing out all over the place. And this was the moment for me to say, this is your time. And you don't have to wait for those corporations to get their DE&I ducks in a row. How long is that going to take? It's been 50 years already. Why not still aim for the C-suite now?
So let me ask you, and there's so much to uncover with that. I wish we had a lot more time, but I'm going to take a natural shift here.
Sure.
And ask you, you know, one of the questions that we prepared for you, talk about, I mean, you look at moving, you were in a room with a corporate executive who wants you to stay and had the inkling to say, you're not going to. You had access to a visionary, for lack of a better way of saying it, a visionary who was like, look, come go with me. I think you have what it takes to be successful. But often you will find so many scenarios, a Black woman who's tapped into the executive level. You have diversity. You have all of this. You're a woman on top of all of that. There's so many things that you could have fell into that said, no, I won't. Now, with that said, I want to ask you one more question because we're nearing the end of our discussion. I can't believe it. You know, what do you tell that person who is looking? Let's say they want to write a book. Who is looking? Because I even thought about writing a book and a person, I had an idea and a person was like, no, that won't work. No, we've all been told no. Talk about how do we overcome the fear to speak up, to actually make that move, to actually not hinder our own selves and our own potential. What would you say? And I love the story about your daughter, but I really want to hear your thoughts on that.
My daughter's book is built on the chassis of No Thanks. So if we cover off on this, we've got her book covered too. And she was inspired by it. But all that to be said, you've got to understand your North Star, not what other people are telling you. You know, Michael Lehman even said, you know, I hear that you sing, and I do. I'm professionally trained. I did that for a long time. And if I had said yes, he would have started working on getting me, you know, some meetings.
Right.
But I had heard from the Lord. Now, I don't know how many believers are out there, but whatever you believe in, this is what I believe in. I'd heard from the Lord after several years of leading praise and worship at my own church and having to sit down after a while and not be able to get up there anymore and like lamenting, why? Like, Lord, why am I not up there? And he said very clearly to me, you have a platform in speaking that is even bigger and has the potential to be even bigger and reach more people than even you singing. And you're just pining over that platform.
Yes.
He said, allow me to work through you and the gifts that you have. Now that gets back to knowing who you are. At the core of things, I am an elite communicator. I am a writer and I'm a speaker. And this is how I'm reaching. I was telling my mom just this morning, this is the thing that will get me all choked up. What I'm doing is a multiplier. When you find your why, you will see that what your purpose is to help other people and multiply your talents. Okay. Mm-hmm. So everybody that I coach, they go back to their lives. They go back to their companies. They're not only better leaders, they make those companies better. Mm-hmm. When I speak to people and I'm on the platform, I don't even know those people in the room half the time. Now, many of them become my followers on social and we become good friends or you have a great rapport, but we don't even know if there are 800 people in the room. We don't know how they're going to take that information. They're going to get helped and they're going to leave that room and multiply it some more. Mm-hmm, these books, they're all over the place. I just did the numbers the other day and I sold more than is normally successful for a self-published author. And I'm getting, you know, receipts from Japan and royalties from the UK and Canada and all of these places. I don't know these people, but their lives are being touched by what I'm doing. When it comes down to it, if you have your ducks in a row and you're not putting fame over people or money over people, you will be blessed and you will be able to multiply your talents and gifts. So I challenge everybody to find out, do the dirty work, do the digging, find out who you are and what those challenges were that were able to shape you, that you were able to learn from to give you that burden of resilience. I'm going to take some water.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I call it the burden of resilience.
Okay.
The burden of resilience is this, is Black people, man, we've been through some tough, tough situations. And as you read the book, you'll see I faced not only bias and discrimination, not just from white folks, but from Black folks, Latina folks, Asian folks. It didn't matter who they were, but if they centered whiteness, this was the boat they were on. And it had very little thing to do with me. This is what I need people to know. Don't take it personal, okay? Because if you do, you'll miss the boat. Then these folks are centering something other than you. And whether it was you or any other brown-skinned girl that came their way, they were going to try to pull you down because they don't even believe in themselves. So they don't value themselves and know their own stories and know the power of the burden of resilience that makes them strong and powerful, they're not going to see it in you. So just sit in the brokenness, sit in the storm. As I said, even in the midst of the downpour, God was hiding me in plain sight.
Sure.
And here I am.
Here you are making a difference and doing it in a powerful way. Wow. I have to tell you, Michelle, this has been phenomenal. You tapped on me a couple of times. What's the word when the old folks used to say.
I had some preachers that would say, "Draw up your feet. I'm coming through."
Well, they would say, "Hey, if I stepped on your toes, just say ouch."
Yes.
Anyway, so I'm with you. I'm with you. Wow, an awesome book that gives you 12 steps. No thanks, 7 ways to say I'll just include myself. Hey, she even wrote a second book. Yes, please, 7 ways to say I'm entitled to the C-suite. Wow.
Can I give another little hint here? January 1st, the companion journal to No Thanks comes out, is released worldwide, and it's called Slay Every Day, 52 Weeks to Rockstar Leadership. And this is a journal that works, okay? Grounded in applied positive psychology and applied neuroscience. The coaching is there, and it's based on a curation of my rockstar leadership tips that were there to promote the book, but became so valuable online to people that I decided to turn it into a journal based on what my coaching community said they needed. So look for that January 1, and you'll be able to take No Thanks, whether you have the remix or you have the original edition, and actually work week by week through a process that will yield you into someone who not only knows themselves, but they're ready to inspire and lead.
Well, I hear a part 2 coming. Michelle, this is awesome. I appreciate all of your kind words and great insight. One that's going to stick with me is know your North Star. Watch out, audience, network audience, know your North Star. That was powerful for me. So I want to thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your knowledge and your wisdom. And I know the network audience will be blessed with this wonderful session that we've had. Till next time.
Thank you so much, Phil. Love you, Network National.
Be powerful, everyone. Have a great day.